Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 700, Deutschland über alles. This has been recorded on January 10th of the year 2010. As always, please use the SpitfireList.com website. It's not only essential for an understanding of these broadcasts, which are increasingly referential and interconnected, but also it is the best single site for information of this kind. I have my entire life's work up on that website for download for free. It's also a page to click on to support the work that I'm doing, and if you don't like what you see, there's no better way of fighting back than supporting the work that I'm doing. By the way, also, there are many things going on, all kinds of developments on the terror front. I'll be updating all of those things when time and circumstances permit, so don't despair if you're interested in that. Now, we're going to continue right where we left off in Side 1. We're going to be accessing more articles from GermanForeignPolicy.com, and we're going to be taking a look at the German use of the European Union and European Monetary Union to basically cement their control over Europe. One of the things that is of great concern to German imperialists is the continued skepticism about the European Monetary Union and the EU on the part of the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom is part of the EU. It's not part of the European Monetary Union, and many British conservatives are extremely upset at the EU and how basically it is simply it has become Greater Germany. And as a result, the Germans are very much interested in subjugating the Conservative Party, the Tories, basically, in the United Kingdom, and seeing to it that Labour or Labour-oriented politicians are brought to the surface and have more to do with setting British policy. This article, which really in many ways sums up what all of Europe is facing, is called The End of Sovereignty. It's from December 14th of 2009. It reads in part as follows, skipping down. According to a recent paper published by the German Institute for International and Security Affairs, or SWP, London should be more firmly integrated into EU foreign policy if for no other reason than for Britain's political economic significance. The authors explain that Great Britain, the second largest economic realm in the EU with London being a hub of international finance, is, unquote, could definitely not be ignored because of its globally designed foreign and security policy, unquote. Because of the United Kingdom's well-known EU skepticism, continental European countries have paid, quote, little attention, unquote, to London. That was a mistake. It would, quote, behoove EU members to insist on the British government's firm engagement for Brussels after the Lisbon Treaty takes effect. Attempts should be made to gain influence on the Conservatives, since they will probably win parliamentary elections in the spring. Because of the growing popularity of the EU critical forces, the SWP describes the current development within the Conservative Party as somber, unquote. And again quoting, the new generation of the Conservative parliamentarians will further strengthen the EU skeptical camp, unquote. Therefore, it will sooner or later, unquote, be necessary to seek a closer integration into the EU. To achieve cooperation with the current party leader, David Cameron, is not out of the question. Up to now, his EU skeptical statements have mainly been out of consideration of internal party power struggles, whereas he himself tends more toward conservative EU pragmatism, unquote. This has become clear already through his backing off from holding a referendum on the Lisbon Treaty. The SWP author suggests that on the basis of this sort of conservative EU pragmatism, unquote, Cameron could use his party leadership position to place the EU skeptical rank and file under pressure. Of course, Cameron's previous failure to settle accounts with the hardliners of his party sends a signal even to the dyed-in-the-wool optimists that there is still a lot of work to be done, unquote. But it is worth the effort to attempt to continue to marginalize the EU skeptics. According to the SWP document, various extraneous circumstances are advantageous to this project. The paper points out the possibilities of the British Conservatives influencing the European Parliament have been weakened since they broke off from the European People's Party, forming a new group, European Conservatives and Reformists, unquote, this year. The authors are also of the opinion that the U.S. government, which is so important to Great Britain, is under the Obama administration, increasingly seeing Britain's significance within the EU as a constructive rather than a conflict potential, unquote. Therefore, the conditions are not disadvantageous for taking action against the EU skeptics. One cannot avoid the task of forcing the EU critical circles into retreat, because even if Labour, against all expectations, does remain in government, it can, quote, not be excluded that the national viewpoint will not come to the fore, meaning the EU skeptical tendency. That is why, in any case, an open debate, unquote, with and in Great Britain around the extension of EU activities must be initiated. The SWP author's suggestions concerning how this should be done remain noncommittal and rather ambiguous. So again, note that basically what's taking place here is that Germany is looking to, in effect, reverse the outcome of the Battle of Britain and to negate the efforts of the brave pilots of the Spitfires and Hurricanes, and basically to force Britain to toe the line. Interestingly enough, it tends to be more the Tories or the Conservatives in Britain who are basically resisting their further integration into the German-dominated EU, and so far Britain has not joined the European Monetary Union. Still more about Germany using the EU and also the EMU as basically a vehicle for imperialism, basically establishing German control first over Europe and then later Die Welt, so to speak. The following is called Assertiveness. It's from December 8th of 2009. Berlin is insisting on access to essential posts in the European External Action Service, or EEAS. According to news reports, the German government is demanding that the post of EEAS General Secretary be given to a German. Leading personnel from the Chancellery and the Foreign Ministry are being suggested. The General Secretary heads the administration and is second only to the EU High Representative for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy, Catherine Ashton, who is considered to be very weak, meaning that a German EEAS General Secretary would have a free hand. The structuring of the EEAS is one of Berlin's most essential objectives since the Lisbon Treaty took effect, reinforcing the EU on its path toward becoming a world power. As was expressed in Berlin's foreign ministry, the basic features of the new administration must be institutionalized by April of 2010, so that the British Conservatives, expected to be the victors of the next parliamentary elections in the spring of 2010, will not be able to have any influence. They are capable of putting up serious resistance to German hegemonic policy. The debate around the structuring of the European External Action Service, or EEAS, is becoming more heated since the Lisbon Treaty took effect December 1st. Whether this new administration should be an appendage of the EU Commission or be an independent structure is one of the issues of the controversy. Berlin is in favor of the EEAS being independent of the Commission. It would thus be more accessible to EU member nations. A central power struggle is around the question of who will get key positions in that administration. The approximately 5,000 assistants currently employed in the EU Commission's foreign policy structures want to be accommodated. The EU nations are demanding that at least one-third of the future positions in the EEAS, mainly leadership positions, be set aside for their national personnel. Since contradicting claims have to be taken into consideration, it is estimated that the final size of the EEAS will be between 6,000 and 8,000 employees. But Berlin is pressing for haste. In May of 2010, at the latest, parliamentary elections will be held in Great Britain. The replacement of the Labour government by a Conservative one is considered certain. The German government is doing everything possible that the basic structural features of the EEAS will be completed by April of 2010. A Conservative British government could otherwise complicate the implementation of the EEAS, as is diplomatically asserted in the German Foreign Ministry, where it is feared that London could seriously resist German plans to use EU foreign policy to rise to world power status. The Labour government reliably accommodated German aspirations on decisive issues, for example, the ratification of the Lisbon Treaty. The chairman of the Social Democratic European Parliamentary Caucus, Martin Schulz, noted with gratitude that during the vote on the treaty, the Labour MP, Catherine Ashton, was its dedicated promoter in the House of Lords. Note the next section, because we're going to develop this further, not only in the next couple of articles from GermanForeignPolicy.com, but in a couple of weeks, we're going to revisit Kosovo. Remember that? Remember Kosovo? We're going to revisit that. The secession of Kosovo from Serbia/Yugoslavia is what the UNPO considers to be its first great triumph, and we'll be coming back to that. But notice that in not only the next section of this article I'm about to read, but in the next two articles, we are looking at proposals by German elements, including German elements of the EU and elements associated with the Green Party, to break up other European countries, including Austria, Italy, Switzerland, and Spain, and to unite many of the German-speaking minorities of those countries with a, quote, greater Germany, and even in certain proposals, to reunite Austria with, quote, greater Germany, unquote. Sound familiar? Well, as William Faulkner once said, the past is never dead and buried. It isn't even past. Continuing. The next section is called Difficult Partner, and that's how Germany sees the EU, sees the United Kingdom. The German establishment is divided on the question of what role London should have in the EU. The chairman of the group, the Greens European Free Alliance in the European Parliament, Reinhard Bütikofer, is against proposals to more intensely ostracize Great Britain. There are parties in his parliamentary group that are calling for the breakup of numerous European nation-states. The organization European Free Alliance, or EFA, has published a map showing a Greater Germany expanded to include Austria, as well as regions of Switzerland and Italy. EFA partner Bütikofer says that he, quote, doesn't place much stock in the discussion about whether we would be better off if we didn't have the British around, unquote. One has to rather, quote, possibly give a difficult partner responsibility, unquote. Better to have them inside the tent sitting out than the other way around, unquote. Catherine Ashton's appointment as EU High Representative for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy is also to Germany's advantage. The German government was particularly set on preventing a strong British EU foreign policy chief, someone like David Miliband, for example. But Berlin does not consider Ashton a threat, quote, everyone has driven it home to her that she is the biggest wimp under the sun, according to Reinhard Bütikofer. Berlin is now insisting on the post of General Secretary in the EEAS, the highest-ranking EEAS official who will have decisive influence on EU foreign policy, given the weakness of the High Representative. It was to the German government's advantage that it had renounced on the posts of EU Council President and EU High Representative for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy, and that it had not insisted on another German being EU Industry Commissioner. The fact that Günther Oettinger was appointed the only EU Energy Commissioner is regretted in Berlin. One opinion in Berlin is that Brussels is now indebted to Germany. Two candidates are reported to be in consideration, with Christoph Jüchsen, the German Chancellor's foreign policy chief advisor, being the favorite. Jüchsen, former chief of the European Affairs Division of the German Foreign Ministry, had directed the policy unit of the EU's High Representative, Javier Solana, from 1999 to 2005, which was considered to be the central command post for EU foreign policy decisions. Jüchsen had had a major impact on the beginnings of the EU's Common Foreign and Security Policy, or CFSP. He also participated in drafting the so-called EU Security Strategy adopted by the European Council in December of 2003. Since 2005, Jüchsen has been working in the German Chancellery. Helga Maria Schmidt is also proposed as a candidate for the General Secretary's post. Like Jüchsen, Schmidt had worked in the German Foreign Minister Klaus Kinkel's office in the 1990s and later served as office manager in Foreign Minister Joschka Fischer's office. By the way, note that Kinkel was former head of the BND, the German Intelligence Service, and the successor organization to the Reinhard Gehlen spy outfit. Now, what we're going to be doing in the last couple of articles from the critically important GermanForeignPolicy.com is taking a look at the German ethnic model. Now, we've spoken about this in the past in connection with the German concept of Volksgruppenrechte, basically the rights of national minorities. And note here that what is being proposed is the breakup of various sovereign nations in Europe. Of course, that's not new. Again, no more Soviet Union, no more Yugoslavia, no more Czechoslovakia. Germany, however, not only reunified, but as we're going to see here, there are now proposals for a greater Germany, including incorporating Austria into a greater Germany and for recapitulating parts of the Habsburg Empire, the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Well, the heir to the Habsburg throne, Karl von Habsburg, is the head of the UNPO, which has been championing the rights of various minority groups that would, if their sovereignty were to become a political reality, would break up large nations, including Russia, China, and the United States. We've been speaking about that in the past, and this will perhaps set this into greater relief. This article from GermanForeignPolicy.com of November 26th of 2009 is called The German Ethnic Model, Part 3. Ethnic chauvinist forces in Austria are demanding the practical application of German ethnic rights, unquote, to the German-speaking population of northern Italy. According to these forces, the government in Vienna should issue Austrian passports to the approximately 300,000 northern Italians or South Tyroleans whose ancestors had been Austrian up until the First World War. Germany has a long practice of absorbing the citizens of its East European neighboring countries, but this would be the first time involving a West European neighbor. By the way, before we continue here, again note that they're looking to a certain extent, recapitulate parts of the old Austro-Hungarian Empire. I'm sure Mr. von Habsburg is very, very pleased with this. Note that the Germans have for a long time, the Federal Republic of Germany has been giving German passports to the German-speaking minorities in Eastern European countries, part of the former Soviet bloc. Also note here the role of the Austrian Freedom Party in promoting the independence of the German-speaking minority in northern Italy. The FPO, as we've seen in past discussions of Jörg Haider and the FPO, was created as a vehicle for the political rehabilitation of Austrian Nazis under the Third Reich and their reintroduction into political life in Austria. And note also that in For the Record 677, we took a look at the a key former member of the Leibstadtorte Adolf Hitler, the 1st Waffen-SS Division, who had been actively training South Tyrolean secessionists in terror. Continuing now with this particular article. Germany has a long practice of absorbing the citizens of its East European neighboring countries, but this would be the first time involving a West European neighbor. This demand accompanies talks about the addition of a paragraph to the Austrian Constitution declaring Vienna the, quote, protective power of the South Tyroleans, unquote, a direct infringement on the national sovereignty of an EU member nation, Italy. At the same time, demands are gaining momentum in South Tyrol for an ethnic-based right of secession, also along the lines of German concepts. Already last spring, the word was going around in the northern Italian Green Party circles that the foundation of a free state South Tyrol along the lines of the Liechtenstein model was being considered. The ethnic chauvinist right wing is seeking annexation by Austria. Austria's new South Tyrol debate originated with plans to amend the country's constitution to include a protective power clause. This would mean that Austria would officially declare itself the protective power, unquote, of all German-language citizens of northern Italy. These plans, with which Vienna would presume a de facto right of intervention in northern Italy, had been in discussion for several years, but a corresponding 2006 resolution, accepted by nearly all parties represented in Parliament, has yet to be implemented. The ruling government coalition partner Austrian People's Party would now like to see it implemented. The spokesperson for South Tyrolean Affairs of the Conservative OVP, Hermann Gahr, announced, quote, that a common resolution will be tabled in Parliament by December, unquote. The protective power claim will not merely be inserted into the preamble of the Constitution, but will be expounded upon its own in its own paragraph. Protests from Rome, according to Gahr, have no impact. The South Tyrolean Affairs spokesperson of the OVP declared, quote, "This concerns the acknowledgement of Austria's political approach already in practice for decades," unquote. The debate has grown sharper through a demand by the FPO, or Freedom Party. The party tabled a motion for a resolution of the National Council in Vienna in which all former Austrians, unquote, in northern Italy and their descendants be granted Austrian citizenship. Former Austrians, unquote, are former citizens of the Habsburg Empire to which South Tyrol had belonged until the end of World War I. Nearly all of the German-speaking citizens in northern Italy trace their origins back to this group. The FPO's motion calling for placing the approximately 300,000 German-speaking North Italians under the protection of Vienna by issuing them Austrian passports is under consideration in the Interior Committee of the Austrian National Council. As Werner Niebauer, speaker for South Tyrolean Affairs of the FPO, openly declared, this motion is, quote, about convergence, unquote. Already in October, the South Tyrolean Freedom, a northern Italian party calling for South Tyrol's secession from Italy, was in Vienna, according to the party, for talks on the question of double citizenship with the parties represented in the Austrian National Council. According to a regional parliamentarian of that secessionist organization, a basic approval of dual citizenship for South Tyroleans could be discerned among all the parties present at the talks, unquote. The ethnic chauvinist forces in Vienna and northern Italy who support these plans can invoke the practice in use by Germany since the 1990s. The Federal Republic of Germany issues German-speaking citizens of its eastward neighboring countries German papers, transforming, for example, 200,000 former Poles into Germans. This German practice, which completely ignores the national sovereignty of its bordering countries, has repeatedly been the source of tensions in eastern and southeastern Europe. Back in the 1990s, Italy offered Italian-speaking Slovenians the possibility of obtaining Italian citizenship. In Hungary, measures are currently being planned that would affect 500,000 Slovakians and about 1.3 million Romanians. Romania, on the other hand, is toying with the idea of granting about 1 million Moldavians Romanian citizenship. And again, please note here that what we're talking about is essentially the disrupting of the national sovereignty of these various countries. Skipping down, more about the South Tyrolean independence movement. Last Saturday's meeting of the South Tyrolean Freedom can be considered paradigmatic. The South Tyrolean Freedom includes the milieu of the former South Tyrolean bombers, again, trained by a former SS man whom we discussed in For the Record 677, ethnic chauvinist terrorists who in the 1960s and later were pursuing South Tyrol's secession from Italy with occasionally deadly bomb attacks. At the meeting, Hermann Gahr, OVP speaker for South Tyrolean Affairs, demanded more, quote, courage for change in South Tyrol, unquote. The former Austrian justice minister demanded that Vienna intensify its struggle for the preservation and development of self-preservation of the South Tyrolean people separated from Tyrol. A parliamentarian of the South Tyrolean Freedom in the State Assembly declared that there remains, quote, only 10 to 15 years to, quote, exercise the right to self-determination of the German-speaking population because of the steady influx of foreigners, unquote. The South Tyrolean Freedom has observer status in the European Free Alliance that unites organizations from all over Europe that are seeking secession. In the European Parliament, the alliance cooperates with the German Green Party in a parliamentary caucus. This map excerpt is taken, well, there's a picture here, it shows the map of the, quote, new, unquote, Europe. These current demands for secession are not limited to ethnic rights. Already last spring, Green Party circles in northern Italy were discussing the founding of a free state South Tyrol, Liechtenstein model. The development shows the real purpose behind the South Tyrolean autonomy so heavily praised in Berlin. Whereas Germany is repeatedly using the South Tyrolean autonomy rights as a model for the peaceful settlement of secessionist conflicts while safeguarding the territorial integrity of the countries concerned, the current debate in Austria and northern Italy show that the secessionist potential has only been suppressed until there is another opportunity to secede. Skipping down, among those who sought the advice of the European Academy Bozen over the past few years were Iraq and Tibetan separatists. Can you say UNPO, boys and girls? Karl von Habsburg. And note here how the UNPO is basically pursuing the geopolitical agenda of Germany, and beyond that, a greater Germany. Also note the role of the German Green Party. We've talked about its fascist antecedents. Not to say that Greens are fascist, but boy, elements of the Green Party sure are. Look what they helped to do in 2000. It was the received wisdom of the Green Party and those who supported it in the so-called progressive sector that there was no difference between George Bush and Al Gore. Yeah, well, check that one out. A little late now, huh? But you asked for it. Now you got it, and I hope y'all enjoy it. I don't. The last article here, and due to the limitations of time, we're not going to be able to go into the entire article. However, it will all be accessed in the description for the record number 700 on SpitfireList.com. Among the countries that are being slated for breakup are Spain. There's talk about breaking Spain into seven different countries. The German Ethnic Model Part 4 from December 2nd of 2009 from the GermanForeignPolicy.com article reads in part, Catalonian secessionists are progressing toward the ethnic dismantlement of Spain with referendums to be held in 161 cities and communities. Scheduled for mid-December, referendums will be held in one-sixth of Catalonia's municipalities on a non-binding, for now, resolution on secession from Spain and the founding of an independent country. Secessionists in other parts of the country, the Basque region and Galicia, are carefully watching what happens. The referendums are providing new impetus to the German strategy of restructuring Europe along ethnic lines. The Federal Republic of Germany provided Catalonian secessionism relative support over the past few years, most recently 2 years ago in the framework of the Frankfurt Book Fair. Berlin's foreign policy front organizations have long since cataloged the Catalan as a Volksgruppe, an ethnic entity justifying eligibility to special rights. And, skipping down, Germany, the EU trailblazer of ethnic privileges and secession, is no innocent bystander in these developments. Since the late 1980s, the German Land Baden-Württemberg has maintained a regional partnership with Catalonia and other regions. And again, this entire article will be accessed in For the Record, in the description for the Record program number 700. Note that, as indicated here, Spain is slated to be broken up into seven different countries. I would note that one of the things that has made Spain a very weak country, and there's a lot of dissension, is the fact that Spain got very heavily nailed by the collapse in the real estate market. One wonders just what might have been responsible for that. In any event, however, please note, do not fail to access the description for the Record number 700 and all of the other information on the www.spitfirelist.com website. That website is the best source for this type of information, has my entire life's work up available for download for free, plus a page to click on to support the work that I'm doing. And if you don't like what you're seeing, there's no better way of fighting back than supporting the work that I'm doing. This concludes For the Record program number 700, Deutschland über alles, being recorded on January 10th of the year 2010. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening, and Happy New Year.